expert web hosting, audio streaming for radio, internet stations and FM alike. www.simplecast.co.uk. Custom packages, bargain starter packages, domain name sales with auto setup within 5 minutes. If you've thought of a broadcast, we've thought of a solution. www.simplecast.co.uk. Temp Network provides reliable temporary staff to your business. Shouldn't Temp Network be supporting your business? Please contact us on 01892 531 777 or visit tempnetwork.co.uk.
Channel Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Who Cares Wins on the 1st of July. Just about to say March there. Yay. I don't know why.
Oh, well, we can always make up extra months in the year.
Welcome. Welcome. My name is Jan Mulligan and my co-presenter today is lovely Angela Bryce-Stevenson.
Yay.
Hello, Angela.
Hello, hello. Hello, listeners.
And Sue, unfortunately, can't be with us today, but we're thinking of you, Sue.
She's
hoping
listening
your feet
in.
Are up, yeah. And you're resting, and hope we see you next week. But following on from last week's show, we had Pilgrim's Hospice on, telling us about their wonderful services. And today we've got another interview with them about labyrinths. A few weeks ago, we all visited Pilgrim's Hospice in Canterbury. And we met with the Reverend Liz Chapman and Martin Yates, who's a complementary therapist. And they very kindly gave us a tour of the site.
Yeah.
But in particular, the Community Labyrinth, which is based at that hospice in Canterbury. So we've got three segment interviews for you to listen to today. Word of warning, just as last time, because several people are talking, the levels can fluctuate. So have your finger ready on your volume control and play along with us in the technical
Turn
stakes.
Turn us up.
But before we go to that, a very good day was had by all yesterday in Herne Bay for Race for Life.
Oh, it was a fabulous day, Jan. As you know, you came along.
Came along.
We had
cheered on Angela
and her team. Day. And I actually managed to jog it. Hop,
excellent.
Limp,
because you've got an injury.
Along. I have, but I listen to my body, but I also, with my mindfulness, listen to the moment. And actually, it's not that bad. It's no worse. It's no better. So I jogged along. I coached a couple of my other teammates that were with me and spurred them on to the finish line. So yeah, it was a brilliant day. And
excellent.
We got 20 quid from somebody on random in the street. Just gave it. It's like fabulous.
You've got to stop showing them your leg as you go past.
No, I think they would have wanted me 20 quid back. It was a great day.
It was lovely. Lovely day, wasn't it? And such a big turnout.
I was hundreds, thousands of women.
Yes.
I mean, Herne Bay normally is busy, but this one, I'm sure there were more people there in all sorts of costumes.
Fantastic.
It was just a massive pink, which was marvellous. I did my honorary pink hat and pink hair.
Some photos were posted to Facebook today.
Yes.
But we've got some more to upload, haven't we?
Yeah, there's a few more that will go up. So if you want to have a laugh, listener, they'll be on our Who Cares Wins Facebook page.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we'll have a bit more about that later on in the show when we get to events.
Yeah.
Because there's some follow-up information. But we'll crack on now with our first bit of interview recording.
Yeah.
As I say, it's Reverend Liz Chapman and Martin Yates. And they're going to be telling us in this first bit the history of labyrinths, how they came about, where they are, and in particular the Pilgrim's Hospice, which is a community labyrinth, which means that anybody can use it.
Yeah, which is fabulous.
So we hope you enjoy it. Mm. And technology allowing...
It should
start
all work.
Now.
We'll see if it starts.
This was actually the first labyrinth that was put into a hospice.
A hospice totally?
A hospice totally.
Okay.
Anywhere.
In the world or the
UK? No, in
the UK.
In the UK.
Okay,
fantastic.
Okay. Labyrinths have a history that goes back to 4,000 years ago. There have been findings of grass labyrinths, brick labyrinths, right the way back over 4,000 years.
Fantastic.
There's a very good one in Norway, which is built of brick and faces the sea, and it's believed that Nordic seamen used it as a place of blessing before they actually set sail on some of their voyages, which is really interesting. So it's got really interesting history that goes back a very, very long time.
Across all nations, all cultures, all religions.
Yeah. So it's not attributed to a certain religion at all then?
No. Because I think the oldest one's found in India. So they're found all over the world.
Right. Yeah. And has anybody noticed a connection as to sort of how they spread?
If you talk or look at the website for the Labyrinth Society. There's a good history on that. But like a lot of things, it's synchronicity. There doesn't seem to be a connection, because it's interesting, Liz mentioning the one in Norway. There's different types. There's a Scandinavian design. There's the classic design, which is seven. But you can have ours is five, and you can have three circles, and so on. The only connection is there's only one way in, and that's the way out as well. So you never get lost, right. And you don't have walls.
And that was actually going to be one of my questions.
If you have walls, they are very, very low.
Right.
So you can just walk straight out. You, it's not like a maze.
Mm-hmm. And does the size have an impact? I mean, obviously, for a lot of places, it would be the amount of space that they have available. But if you could have an enormous one, is there any greater benefit, less benefit?
I wouldn't say
no,
so.
It's
a bit like a meditation. So if you want to do a 5-minute meditation, you do a 5-minute. If you want to do a half-hour one, do a half-hour one. And yes, some of them, the one at Chartres is amazing in the cathedral there, because it's the basic one, but it's got four loops off it. Right. And you walk. So it takes a long time to walk it. Whereas I know the one at ours is a 5-circuit one, so you can get a wheelchair. It's wide enough to push a wheelchair round. And the one at Great Oaks Hospice in Forest of Dean is only 3. Right. So that won't take very long to walk if you're, you know. So no, again, it's totally individual.
So, so going back to your question, your point you said about the design, you said the classic design is 7, but you went for 5. Is that because of space and wheelchair
access? Yes.
Had you already decided that it was going to be where it is, or
yes,
that was
all part and parcel? 2004, well, 2003, maybe earlier than that, we started talking about it and talking where would we have it. And eventually we found the space, we found the place, and then of course we needed to get to raise the money. Mm-hmm. And we got it with a grant from Department of Health, I think, as a community project. So it's not a hospice labyrinth exclusively.
Yes.
It is open to the to anyone in from the community to come in and use it. And that's why when you go out there, you'll see a board telling you how to use it if you want.
And so you say 2004 was when it started. What was that first thought? Who had that first thought, and how did it?
Well, several of us. I'm a shamanic practitioner outside the hospice, and so I use things like the labyrinth in everyday work. Beltane, which we've just passed at May 1st, is a time to walk the labyrinth in the Celtic calendar. Lizzie Gothrow came across it in her pastoral work, also through some way, and got in touch with Lauren Artress, who pioneered the work, the rebirth of it into the Anglican Church. But of course, it was in the church when Chartres Cathedral was built. Mm-hmm. So it was built as part. So it's not something like everything. You know, reflexology was rediscovered in 1929 or whatever in the West, but it had been going for 4,000 years before, just like the labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's been a resurgence in labyrinth use since 1968.
Right.
Did something special happen then, or is that just...
I think practitioners like Martin and like myself just found it as a really useful tool to have. Mm. I think it's a real asset at the hospice.
Yeah. The advantage of it in palliative work is that anyone can use it at any time. You don't actually have to walk the labyrinth. You can just go and sit in the garden. Because that was the idea, that was the other idea of it, was that it wasn't just a labyrinth. Andy Wiggins, who runs a landscaping business and now labyrinth builders, laid everything out on sacred geometry lines, so that everything enhances the feeling of it. And you can walk the labyrinth. We've done it while some affair's been going on, and the people who've walked it have not been interrupted or distracted by the some affair, the Punch and Judy show and all the rest of it. But most important of all, it's just a very, very peaceful area. Mm. And in palliative care, you need those spaces. People go and have their lunch in there. People just go and sit. Kids can run round it. play aeroplanes and race around.
Is that
so? And it's all very safe.
So it's a really good place just to be.
It is.
To stop and be.
I mean, I always say that when it's in use, it's a sacred space.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, it's a therapeutic garden that people can go and sit in
and use.
If you look at the history of that area, that originally was our rose garden that was planted in honour of the founding of Pilgrim's Hospice. So now when you drive in, it's right in front of you. It's a lovely walkway up to it, and it enhanced the whole area. Because at the same time, we put the new car park in, which took away all the lawn. And that upset a lot of people. Mm. And yes, I mean, someone like myself who's been here for a long, long time, it was sad to see the lawn go.
Yeah.
But what we've got now is better. Mm. And you've got to change. You know, if it doesn't change and grow, then it withers and dies. And
letting go of the old, but actually the new.
Yeah. And it was definitely the right thing to do at the time. Mm. There was no two ways about it. And it's proved very, very useful since, in all sorts of ways.
And continuing that theme of development, we've actually developed a memorial path now where people can have a brick and put people's names on in memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually now connects in with the path into the labyrinth. So you can walk the memorial path and it takes you naturally into the labyrinth path to go into the labyrinth garden.
Oh,
so we've connected the two things that way, so it's really... It's really good.
It means an awful lot to an awful lot of people.
It does.
Very much.
We have day hospice patients here 2 days a week.
Yes.
People that live in the community and come into day hospice. And they love going out there in the summer.
Mm.
Just for some sunshine, just to relax. And they do actually do a labyrinth walk quite seriously,
don't they?
And get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Mm. And again, as Martin said, the joy of having the paths wide enough for a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's or a Delta frame.
Or a Delta frame. Mm-hmm. You know, it's access for everybody.
That's right. It's not that, I'm not able.
No.
So I can't actually go around. It's actually for everybody.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And also we love the fact that you have the one that you can trace with your finger.
Yeah, we were very careful to make it a Canterbury thing. Myself, a colleague of mine, who works, does a lot of bushcraft, and the guy who built, who actually laid all the stones down, we source the wood, it's local chestnut. The stakes that hold it up are from Blean Woods, coppiced chestnut stakes, and we carved it out. So it's exact replica of the stone one, of our permanent one. So you can finger walk it if you don't want to actually go around the whole thing.
And if you're visually impaired, you can finger walk it while somebody walks the main labyrinth for you, or you can finger walk it and get it in your mind, and then you can be accompanied to walk it. So that's the other use of that.
That's fantastic.
And in terms of the stone one, how was the design arrived at and the colour scheme?
That was the Lizzie Hopthrow got a group together. Of about 6 or 7 of us, which included people like myself, the Becky, the marketing manager at the time, and patients and carers, and Andrew Wiggins, the builder. And it was, what do we want? And he said, well, you can't have that because we can't build it.
Mm.
And then it was down to Andrew and Lizzie, really, about the sourcing of it. They presented that and the committee said yes, and then everyone else had a vote, and that's, so it was organic, it grew.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the design was Andrew Wiggins. He's done quite a few of them now, and he'd done one for a small one for Chelsea Flower Show the year before, I think, and he's involved. I think he's the regional secretary of the Labyrinth Society in the south end of England or something, so you know, he knows what he's doing. And we were guided a lot of it by it.
It's actually made up of 35,000 hand-cut Chinese bricks.
Wow.
Because the Chinese are the only people that could give us the precision that we needed to make it.
Right.
That green brick, hand-cut Chinese bricks.
And for the benefit of the listeners, could one of you sort of describe the colour and the shape?
Well, the shape is classic round shape with five five circles. Well, they're not exactly circles, but it's a five track with a large centre. And in the centre, we now have two benches, so it's a large centre, so several people can go in there. But because we were aware of our patients, to walk all that distance is a long way, and so you've got somewhere to sit for them, but also somewhere to sit, and because quite often when you get to the centre of the labyrinth, you want to stay there for a little while. The colour...
Oatmeal.
Yes, oatmeal with darker walls, with a slightly reddy brown wall.
And in the centre there, is that...
That was just a design, yes.
The circle in the centre.
Yeah, that part of any labyrinth you design, there's always that shape there at that point.
And if somebody were designing a building one and they went extremely radical with bright colours, is that a positive or a negative thing?
It's individual, whatever you want. And if one of the things when I do... presentations of this. I've got a PowerPoint slideshow of about 300 or 400, and they're all sorts. You name it, they're built in the strangest places. I build one in my back garden every year, mow it, and it grows out over the winter, and so it's slightly different every year. And there's a lovely one down at St Margaret's Bay. In one of the gardens down there, and that's a really interesting shape. But there, you know, you see them on the sides of mountains, you see them in woodland, and of course you're going around trees in woodland and that sort of
thing. And I've seen in the handout you've given us on the back page, there's a portable rainbow one.
Yeah, that's a plastic one that we could take to the other hospices or to lend to the community groups.
Channel Radio.
And welcome back. So did you see what we did there? Nice piece of music about walls. But what did we learn in the first bit? Labyrinths don't have walls.
No, and for a very valid reason.
Absolutely. We're going to find out more about that in a moment. A couple of technical things just to say to you folks. If we were a little bit muffled in the first section, we know our producer would have been yelling at us had he been here. Yes, I'm sorry, I forgot to turn the air conditioning off.
But we were hot.
And if that first interview seemed to clip off a bit quickly, that was properly edited, have you know, so don't worry about that.
Planned.
We sort of know what we're doing. Doesn't
no,
work.
We definitely know what we're doing. We're superstars.
Absolutely. So we have now the second bit of our interview with Reverend Liz and Martin. In this section, they're going to talk to us about how labyrinths are used, the differences between walking a physical labyrinth and either tracing a wooden one or a printed labyrinth with your fingers or your eyes, and a bit about the various visitor groups they have coming to...
Yeah, because they do the visual... You can visualise it, they were saying, and they talk about it, don't they?
Yeah, so Martin's going to talk to us about that, hopefully now.
Yay!
You mentioned earlier that labyrinths are always on the flat, as opposed to a maze, which might be edge.
Yeah.
If you were to design a labyrinth that had actual physical walls or hedges,
I would say problem is a good word, really, because the idea of a labyrinth is to nurture you, not to put you in a position of panic.
Right.
And if you go into somewhere where you can't see how you're going to get out of it, that's contrary to what... That's complete...
Right.
Contrary to what you want to do in a labyrinth. The labyrinth is to find yourself, maybe, or to find an answer, a maze, or if you go into somewhere where you can't get out, you don't find anything, you just find panic.
And sometimes, particularly with bereaved people, they have quite a strong experience when they're walking the labyrinth, and if they feel overwhelmed, they can just walk out.
Of course.
Yeah. So,
if we do an organised walk, we have what we call facilitators who've done labyrinth practice and a small course or a long course, it's up to you. And we usually have one or two people standing around the outside to help anyone who get, because you can get lost, you can forget which way you're going sometimes, because like all meditation, it takes you out of your thinking brain. Or, as Liz said, you know, you just become a little bit overwhelmed and you need someone just to take you aside and sit with you just let the angst dissolve and gently come out.
And it is used by outside group. The Multiple Sclerosis Society have their annual memorial service on the labyrinth, and they come in the evening and actually have a candlelit time there, which is really lovely. It's very much a community resource, and where it's situated in the hospice, you can actually come into the car park, park the car, go and walk the labyrinth and not be involved in anything to do with the hospice. So if you are a bereaved relative whose family member died here and you find it difficult to come back but you'd still like the experience of walking the labyrinth or just time here, you don't actually have to come into the hospice to use the labyrinth. And I think that's a plus point.
Very much so.
First Friday of every month I run Carers Morning, and the last one was a lovely morning, and we offered it to the group and they all came out and we explained it briefly, and those that wanted to walk walked, but that's not an all, you know, we didn't say right, you know, every April or every May or whichever we're going to walk it. That was just one of those things that we give them the chance to offer, because some of them had mentioned it. We have had organised ones. I like doing a twilight one, a candlelit one, or a dawn one, and I've done that and offered it to the staff and anyone else that wanted to. And you know, that's my own personal thing. We have had specific ones. I mean, obviously, when we dedicated it, that was a specific one where as many staff who could turn up turned up. But coming back to the one Liz mentioned, the MND Society, a few years ago they had an anniversary and they asked all the local groups to light a candle at the same hour. And the local group, because they had, one of the people on the committee had their loved one here, asked us if we could do it on the labyrinth. And so we put a ring of for everyone who turned up, they stood around the outside with a candle, mm-hmm. In a paper bag, you know, a little nightlight.
Oh, yes.
And at 6 o'clock they lit it, and from that it became an annual an annual event that they run themselves. So that's excellent community. Mm-hmm. That was what one of the things we wanted it to be for the community, that groups like that could use it. But we've had yoga groups come up, haven't we?
And what sort of feedback do you get from people? Do they come out with instant feedback with very, you know, momentous or certain? I know somebody said to me that they went in with one question but came out with something completely
different.
Yeah, we have a comment book that people can write in instantly, or we just hear things back months later, days later, you know. And sometimes it is like that, you know, you go in, you should always have a purpose. Maybe it's just to feel better,
yes.
You know, not necessarily, you know, am I going to win the lottery? But you can't, but, you know, you get the answer you need. It may be not the one you want,
yes.
But you get the answer that you need from it. And yes, I've had feedback from various walks I've had sometime later. Yes, it's different. And the other thing we've done with patients in the past, you know, not specific research, but we've had patients sit out and someone else has walked for them. And like absent healing, we've done absent walks where the patient, right, 11 o'clock, so-and-so is going to walk the labyrinth for you. So the patient sat down at home, nice and comfortable, and at 11 o'clock, the member of staff has walked the labyrinth for them. And both parties reckon it helps.
I've had experience of that with a patient on the ward who was extremely agitated and desperate to walk the labyrinth, but because of her condition, we couldn't actually get her out there. We couldn't even get her in a very big, high-backed wheelchair, which we had. So what I did was I gave her a finger labyrinth to trace, found out what she wanted me to pray about, to think about, and I went out and walked the labyrinth while she traced it with her finger. And when I came back in, she was fast asleep and peaceful.
Yeah.
So don't ask me how it works, I just know it does.
Yes. Not the know-how, no. Just the, as you say, the end result.
I don't think we've had anyone walk the labyrinth and say, God, never again.
No.
Everybody has had a positive experience.
Some people do say, I didn't feel very much. And I always say, that may come in a few days' time. I think the most important thing about labyrinth is it creates space. You know, we're all rushing around. Visitors to patients here are anxious, agitated. And it just creates that space for you to take one thought or one idea with you as you walk. Then you get to the centre, you sit, you think about it. And then on the way out, we always say you're preparing to come back out into the world. You may have your answer, you may not. But you need to be thinking about coming back to getting on with your daily life on the way out. And I think it's just about creating space, isn't it, for people, really.
If we can get our carers to do it with their loved ones, it's double bonus, because they have to stop doing what they're doing,
yes.
And they don't realise while they're pushing their loved ones around, but they themselves are creating space and time for themselves, and that's so
valuable.
Often
they don't
take, do they? No. But sometimes, and if they sit at home with a finger labyrinth, because it can make them out of clay, you know, that air dry clay you can make that. If they sit, it's an excuse for them to sit and do that. So, you know, we all need a reason sometimes just to sit.
Doing, isn't it? It's a to-do on my list. Can I do that?
Yeah.
But it actually gives them permission to take time.
Right,
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
It's a tool to be used whichever way you feel most comfortable with. There's no right or wrong way. You know, we each have our own individual ways of doing it and how we will tell people to do it. And then they go away and then just tweak it.
So there's like a guideline, I suppose, isn't it? That because I've never walked on before, so it's a great experience for me today. But it's so it's like a guideline of this is how, like you say, on the way out is expectation of you being prepared to come back to reality now and to get on with what your next task may be. So presumably there's also a guideline for, and as you're entering, to like meditation, to allow the thoughts to just come and go, and to be aware of just that one.
Well, it helps to quieten the mind, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. Most important guideline is to give yourself time.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you've got to do. You can't rush it.
Mm.
You need to keep this guideline simple. So give yourself time. Only start when you're ready. And it is better to have some sort of reason for doing it.
Yeah.
It's not necessary, but it does help. If you just, you know, or you can do it for someone else. You know, just walk it. Send love to someone else.
Mm.
A bit of healing to someone else.
And in terms of either the wooden one or a paper-based one, I would think the instinct is probably to do it with one's dominant finger. But if that's either not possible or you choose not to, has there been any studies as to whether there's more benefit, less benefit, different
reactions? I haven't come across any studies about it. I've done it myself, and I haven't noticed any difference.
Oh, right, okay.
But then, you know, as a complementary therapist, massage is my medium. I'm pretty ambidextrous. There's lots of studies being done, but not that sort of specific one. The studies, the research is like everything else, is amazing what's being done, but it's been the outcome as it enhanced the life. I mean, one of the most interesting ones I came across was in America, a group of first year nurses at a hospital. The control group just came in and went to work, but they did a stress chart every day, and the research group walked the labyrinth before they started their shift, and then did it. And at the end of the year, or 18 months, however long the study went on for. I think there were two outcomes. Obviously, the stress levels were a lot lower in the group that walked the labyrinth. But the control group who didn't walk the labyrinth, a lot of them left nursing.
Wow.
It was too much. Far more, a noticeable amount left nursing. Because in every cohort you get, you're going to get people who are going to go through. And get, you know, into their nursing and think, actually, this isn't for me. But it was a noticeable number didn't leave nursing from the group that walked the labyrinth. But not every hospital has got that facility.
No, unfortunately.
Mm. And the other thing about asking about fingers, I use my feet. In the summer, I take my shoes and socks off and actually walk the labyrinth in my bare feet, because you can feel the undulation of the stones, and you feel the heat and the cold. Some of it's in shade and some of it's in full sun. And for me personally, that actually enhances my experience.
Mm.
Somebody else might not want to do that, but for me, that actually enhances it.
Good way of grounding.
And sometimes when I'm walking it, I will burst into song.
Yeah. I'm quite sure that came from.
But, you know,
Yes, we've had people walk it who started to skip, and that sort of thing. It just, you know, or they've got slower and slower. So, yes, you have to learn to overtake people or let people pass you.
Yes.
So you have to be aware of other people.
So you can have several people
Yes, and obviously people who are without hands will have to use their feet to do it, or other bits of.
And if you were to do it purely visually, looking at a paper or a chart, whether somebody was walking it or not, do you think that would make a difference?
That does make a difference. It works, though, because I've done that. I've sat and looked at it and just found myself tracing my eyes, following the path round.
As you say, I think it's that focus that brings you to just, like we were talking with meditation and the breathing, we talked about mindfulness in the shows, and it seems to me it's that bringing your attention to just this one place, this time, and at the moment everything else can be just paused while you're here.
And you'll find when you go out there, it never ceases to amaze me. We are 2 minutes from the Reams Way, which is the main road into Canterbury, and you're not aware of the traffic when you walk in the labyrinth.
No.
Which is like a meditation.
Which is amazing, isn't it, really, if you think about it.
Thank you. No more time to waste, no more excuses. Gotta reach out of your arms and embrace the sun. No more time for self-pitying abuses. Gotta stand up and shout and say, I am the one. 'Cause there's been too much crying and talk of being free. Gotta jump off that cliff and be who you were born to be.
Welcome back.
Hey,
you couldn't see that, listeners, but Angela was singing away to that one. Tell us your use of this.
We use it a lot with Lynn Franks and the workshops that we use. We have permission with Bliss and Lucinda to use it. And at the end of the workshops, where it's all about women creating their businesses, mm-hmm. so we're all standing in a circle and we all have the words on sheets and we all sing it. And then by the end of the end of that workshop, we're all clapping and shouting and all going off with this huge positive vibe. So excellent. Every time I hear it, it just takes me straight back to those workshops and the feelings you get from people that are going to go out and do something, whether it's a labyrinth or whether it's a caring aspect, doing something and feeling great about it.
Excellent. And from talking to Martin and Reverend Liz, we heard that a lot of people get that positive inspiration from walking the labyrinth as well, don't they?
Absolutely.
And in this section we're about to listen to, Sue and Angela walked the labyrinth.
We did.
And I traced the wooden labyrinth.
You did.
On the signpost. And so in this section we report back on our experiences. And Martin again tells us a little bit more about other people that have used it.
Yeah, and he was there, so because it was my first experience.
And it was damp, so don't be put off by that. Here we go.
We like wet rain.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was raining, so apologies if you were standing
there
getting wet.
No, it's lovely.
Only when I came out and went to sit down, it's like, it's raining.
Can I ask you what? Have you got any feedback of, I'm not expecting anything. You don't have to say anything.
For me, it was very much going in, it was very much released. Very much. And then spiritually, I was actually joined by my father, who passed in 2008.
Interesting.
So he was there, and we had a good old chat. Which, funny enough, because the birds got louder and louder
they did, yes.
as I got more and more into the centre. So it was a huge, there was a lot of release for me. And then when I came to leave, to come back out, all I noticed is I felt there's an element of, by coming back out, by you walking it, there's an element of you are preparing, but you are in a different state. Mm. You're in a different... Mm. I felt more upright. I felt, okay, yep, and there we go, back to the grindstone. But, yeah, everything's going to be okay. So, whether I got an answer or more, it was my emotional.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it filters out over the next few days or so. I've done it on that one, just to see what it was like to walk into the centre and then just walk straight out. Mm. It isn't quite, for me, quite complete, but it's pretty near. The sad thing at Chartres is that they open it on a Friday afternoon, and you can only walk in. You have to come, because it's such a long, long walk. And of course, so many people go to do it, because it is quite staggering, a labyrinth. It's quite a unique, it's an incredibly powerful thing. So if you think, whatever your belief is, whether it's Christian or not, things like those cathedrals were built with love and with tremendous spirituality. So what went into the building of that was something quite powerful.
Amazing. And that's funny enough, when Liz was saying about walking it in bare feet, I would love to come back and do that.
Yeah, it's lovely too.
Be able to actually feel, as you say, the workmanship and love that went into putting
tremendous.
That together, and you say even the bricks, Liz was saying, putting those, the Chinese hand and the crafting.
Yes.
That, the energy there and the love, it's beautiful.
I feel much.
You have to experience it rather than describe it.
I feel much more calmer.
I think without a shadow of doubt, if you just do nothing else but walk it, with no intent, it just makes you feel that little bit easier inside. And that's what it's all about. Mm. It's just taking that attention.
Because I was aware of my dad.
Dad's staying to
me. He passed over in 2006. I was very aware of him next to me as we were walking.
And also for me, I didn't know what to expect. Mm. And it's like, so do I go yet? I think I'm ready, so okay, I'll go. But I found myself, I was really mindfully walking. It just really made me mindfully walk. It wasn't a case I've made a decision to do that. I just found that, I really need to feel, but I was quite unbalanced going in. But coming out, I was quite,
I felt I was more, my head up a lot more on the way out than I was on the way in.
There's definitely a difference between going in and coming back out.
The energies were just so lovely. Mm.
How about the finger, Jo?
I get it more physically, because it releases my neck and my shoulders.
Yeah.
So I find it sort of
fascinating,
therapeutic from that viewpoint.
You must tell our physio about that.
Starts sort of top of the head and just, you can feel it sort of peeling, relaxation going down. But I have to slow myself down, because the sort of scientist in me wants to go, well, how's this feel? And then I have to, no, you're doing it for you, not find out. So that's the thing. But once I slow down, then I can, it's almost like it's peeling away, and it does relax the muscles. So, yeah, it might be worthwhile.
I don't know whether you did try the other hand.
I did the other hand, but I did it blind and the other hand. So it skewed the results, I must admit, because I didn't do it truly scientifically. But we were talking, because of the wood, with its ageing over time, which is lovely to feel and to look at. But when you do it blind, there's a knot or a
knot
gap
has
in
come
it.
Out.
So at that point, even though I knew I'd done it already, my finger and my brain said, that's a dead end, what do I do now?
Yeah.
It wasn't sure, have I got to the end? I know I haven't got to the end, because I've already done it sighted.
Yes.
So that was interesting as well to see.
And it's nice to have that feedback, because what I was saying was that it's always a question for me, do we refurbish it or not?
nature, as near to nature as intended, and nature didn't intend you to rub it down again and oil it. But I think there's a need to. We do make sure it's not going to give you splinters or anything.
Yes.
But that's why, again, the chestnut's really hard, and it's worn very well. It's done extremely well, and become a very important part of the whole thing. Yeah.
That's a lovely space, especially with the planting, right. And it's just beautiful to look at, and as you say, the quiet of it, but the birds going across. Interesting what you said, that the birds get louder the closer, presumably because you're becoming more
energy.
Aware.
It's the energy that's built up.
It made me giggle at one point, because it was
While I love working with the labyrinth, I think the overall delight for me is that people just get drawn to it when they need to. And some people go in there and sit in there and they don't even realise there's a labyrinth there. It's just the space. And that's so very, very important.
Yeah.
There's been other work done. I was at a meeting quite a few years ago with the Labyrinth Society. Up at the university, they had the regional meeting up there. And there was a couple who got an open space, a large, upmarket bed and breakfast, and huge grounds, and they were building a labyrinth, and they put one in. But there was a stream running through it, so they piped the water, and of course they analysed the water going in. And then analysed it coming out the other side, and it was different.
Wow.
It was actually... There's always been this thought, but they actually did it. Something to do with the ions. I don't know the scientific side of it, but like you can do with blood. You can do test the blood and then do some work and then test it again and say, yes, there's a difference. The water was different.
Because they talk about the tour, don't they? Because that's a labyrinth.
Yes.
If you walk that labyrinth, that's you go in as one person and you come out. I've not done it yet. We've just done the
straight room. I got a drum on the top of there.
Oh.
That's a tour.
I've
meditated
in there.
That's wonderful.
Sorry, what tour are we talking about?
Glastonbury.
Right. Yeah, sorry.
Yes, it is. It's fascinating what you do. But like all complementary stuff, there's no money to be made out of it, so trying to push it on is so difficult getting the money for it is very, very difficult.
And also I think for a lot of these sort of complementary therapies, as we've explained before on the previous show with mindfulness, is that, like the labyrinth, these things have to be experienced. You can't really put a marketing promotional leaflet together to tell you about the labyrinth or the experience and why you should do it and why you should try it. And how do you really sell an experience? Because it's my experience, that's your experience. That's all very different, isn't it?
Yes.
Your experience, the whole, the release, again, the physical side of things.
I suppose the nearest we come to selling it is that we're all involved, each department or each person here belongs to a national association.
Right.
And we all have regional work, regional groups. So I've had my regional group here several times. The social workers have, the chaplains have, and they come from all over the south of England. I did a labyrinth session at our national conference about 3 or 4 years ago. So that broadcasts it, and that's where other hospices pick it up from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nearest you can do to marketing
it, I suppose.
Mm. But yes, it is, it's true. You've got to have the experience.
Mm.
And of course that's the glory of having it as a community one. So we've had a yoga group come here. We've had the schools of English and the other schools from Canterbury come and use it.
Mm.
And that really, makes a difference, sometimes immediately, sometimes probably 10 or 15, 20 years time.
Later.
They will remember it.
Yes.
They may come across another one somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Fascinating.
It is.
And welcome back to Who Cares Wins Radio on channelradio.co.uk.
Yay! Fascinating stuff.
Absolutely. And so, if you want to visit the labyrinth, the address is Pilgrim's Hospice, Canterbury, and that's 55 London Road. If you're an individual or a couple, that should be okay just to turn up. But obviously, if you're a group, please do phone ahead, just checking that it's okay and there isn't something scheduled there that you might either be interrupting or might delay your tour.
Mm. Or find out if there are actual groups where they're doing particular events and you want to join in one of the walks that Martin often organises.
Because
I like the sound
ones,
of the S.
Yes,
I like the sound of that one.
Yeah.
Have to organise that somehow. Maybe we could have a new Who Cares Wins.
We could.
Candlelit. That'd be nice. I love the fact that it's 35,000 bricks, hand-cut bricks. That's just amazing. But also, she was saying from China, but there's obviously that spiritual connection as well with the sort of love that's been put into making those bricks. And listeners, if you haven't seen the photos, do have a look on our Facebook page. They don't do it justice. If you can pop up there, do go and have a look, and just literally just standing looking at the actual layout is
a beautiful area.
Beautiful. And you're right in the heart, as they say, right in the heart of Canterbury, two sort of spitting distance from Reams Way, and yet it's so quiet.
Yes.
And I didn't even know it was raining, which is that I'd obviously gone somewhere, as I didn't even feel that I was completely drenched when I came back out. And I actually apologised to Martin because I thought, oh, poor guy's been standing there on the outer edge and was waiting for me to come back. And obviously, when Jan and I and Sue, we were all out there, but Jan was to one side with the wooden finger trace, whereas both Sue and I were actually walking the labyrinth together, and we didn't have to do any mirror signal manoeuvres. We didn't overtake each other, so it works. It just works. There's no stress or anxiety about, oh, where am I supposed to be walking or where. It literally just follow and it just happens.
Because everybody's going at their own pace.
That's right. And you're in your own thoughts and your own questions, and allowing that peacefulness and the beauty of it to take you over, really. And sort of then things start to come into play into your head about maybe answers, or just literally stop and be. They use that lovely phrase. And I just thought, yes. And for me, it's... anything for me, I need to experience it as well. And as they said, it is something that to experience it, then you'll get it.
Yes.
It's not necessarily... they have got a lovely brochure that does do some marketing for it, which is brilliant.
And that can be picked up again.
They've got that in reception.
Yeah.
So if you want to just go into reception and see the other information and pick up a leaflet, a little brochure, or even just have a look. They have a wooden board outside the labyrinth.
Yes, like that's one of the photos signs, that we've popped up.
So do have a look. But it was fabulous to meet Martin and Liz.
Yeah,
the
very
Reverend
kind
Liz.
And generous with their time.
They were.
It was a
they
very
were,
good morning.
And we had lovely hot drinks and biscuits they gave us.
So that's a tip to anybody out there who'd like to come on the show. We do visit as
we
well,
do.
So you don't have to come live to the studio. We do visit. Our only requisite is tea and biscuits.
Yes.
And then
chocolate ones.
And talking of listeners, we've got a listener today.
Yeah,
Jane,
new listener.
From abcsimpleas.co.uk. Jane's a health practitioner and trainer. So
Yay.
Hello to Jane.
Hello, Jane.
And
maybe we can get her on the
show.
She
might be on the show at some point.
If she's interested.
Our guest appearances through the summer are pretty much booked up.
Yes.
But if you're planning ahead, if kids are going back to school in September, if you think September is a quieter time for you, please do get in touch if you'd like to come on the show. As I say, you can come to the studio live on a Monday afternoon.
Have fun with us.
Have fun with us here. Or we can visit you within reason.
Yes.
So we're not going to say we'll come everywhere. But
Bonnie Scotland might be a bit far because we do normally do the recordings in the morning of Monday.
Yes.
And then we come in the afternoon to run the show. So bear in mind, could we get back? I suppose if we had a private Who Cares Wins helicopter.
Yes. So listener with helicopter.
if you want to
like
donate
to
a good cause. Actually, yes. Who Cares Wins on the blades.
On the blades.
Hey.
Okay.
Right, I'm off.
Back down to earth. So a couple of shows coming up that you might be interested in. On Thursday the 4th of July, 8 p.m. till 9:30 p.m, Becoming Psychic.
Oh, with Sammy.
With Sammy, yep.
Yay.
Sammy's guest that day is the international medium Billy Cook. And there's a free live on-air readings from Grant Collier.
All right.
Also, we seem to be going back in time because it's actually tomorrow, the 2nd of July, between 11 and 12 noon. Jules and John's guests on Scoff and Quaff.
Scoff and Quaff.
Yeah.
Yum.
Gets you taste buds going, doesn't it? Andy Setterfield from
Hoodner's Horse.
Hoodner's Horse.
I know, yes.
And Matthew Causey Lawson of Kent Fine Foods. So that sounds like a good
show. Yes, more foods.
And we talked a little bit about your Race for Life.
We did.
And there's going to be a men's version coming up.
I think there is. I don't actually know, and I haven't got it to hand. That's bad planning on my part, probably.
No, mine as well. I chucked you in the deep end and mentioned it.
You did, didn't you?
Didn't bother to look
but there
it
is,
myself.
I'm sure, a specific men's
it,
race, isn't
the
there,
end
for
of your
the prostate
cancer.
I can't say
men's
the word.
Cancer is the what men's, they said.
All men's cancers. But, and I think they're now trying to get more and more people and men. Because also there's charity video clip being done by Samuel L. Jackson.
Ah, right.
And he's trying to get, again, more and more men to talk about, because that's one of the key things. Apparently, yeah, men don't talk as much as the women do about their ailments.
Unless it's man flu. Don't hear them stop.
Or the Andrews flu. There's a new stream of flu out there, I hear.
Okay. And now you had some interesting cards with you earlier.
Oh yes, we were talking about Lynn Franks and the Be Who You Want to Be, etc. So I brought along the cards that we use in seed coaching and the seed workshops, and they are affirmation cards that Lynn put together based on her manifesto from the seed handbook. And so I said to Jan, why don't we just pick one randomly as you do, and we'll see what comes out for today. And very appropriately, the one that we pulled out is Learn the Rules, Then Break Some. And on the back of the card, it reads, rules exist to help you to help give our lives order and structure, but they may influence your behaviour in a way that's not so true to your values or your personal growth. So leaders break rules, artists break rules, inventors break rules, entrepreneurs break rules. So breaking the rules is about changing patterns and creating new realities. And an action here suggests, think of a routine or pattern in your behaviour that exists because you're following your own or someone else's rules or expectations. Even though in reality it may not be essential to your well-being, then take action. Break that self-imposed rule and feel how freeing it can be.
Excellent. And in a similar vein, I found a nice quote from Albert Einstein.
Ah, yes.
And he said, strive not to be a success, but rather to be of value.
Absolutely.
And that can sometimes be breaking the rules. If everybody's expecting you to do your best, to be a winner, sometimes that's not the important bit for your own benefit, well-being.
And like the labyrinth, you know,
absolutely.
Stop and be yourself, be who you were born to be. It's funny, isn't it, how our shows, it's as if we planned them. They all fall together with the music and
absolutely.
The interviews.
And talking of planning, we have a guest in the
we
studio
do.
Next week.
We have a real person
a real
in
person
the studio.
With us, Frances Beaumont. Frances Beaumont is of Dyspraxia UK. And dyspraxia is a fascinating condition.
Yes.
She'll be telling us lots more about that, her organisation, but also a new charity she set up.
Oh, great.
So tune in at 3 o'clock, Who Cares Wins Radio, channelradio.co.uk. To listen to Frances and hopefully the Three Musketeers.
Well, we'll be here, definitely. We'll get Sue in. She's hopefully suitably rested.
Absolutely. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye for now.
Take care.